now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Carissa Conti of the website intoworlds.net, and she also has her own dedicated YouTube channel. We'll provide the links for the website as well as her YouTube channel on our website and on our YouTube channel. Carissa Conti has had a number of experiences in her life. She's a very astute observer of not only the real physical 3D, in my view, rapidly verging in a 4D world, but she has the ability to describe in very understandable terms what it's like to have MyLab experiences, to experience hyperdimensional phenomena. And I'm really excited about having her on. So without any further ado, Carissa Conti, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you, James. Thank you for having me.
Well, your article that you wrote about phenomena in the workplace really hit home, because you pointed out, and the article for everyone is conspiracies. I can't help but laughing because all of it is true. Conspiracies in the workplace and microcosm of the greater world matrix. And you point out, Carissa, that we spend so much time at work. And, you know, a lot of people, especially in the New Age metaphysical community, they kind of denigrate the whole concept of work. And what I say is, look, we're here in this reality, and yes, the monetized debt system could be improved upon, but it's what we got to work with. We still got to earn a living. We still got to pay for a roof over our heads. We still got to put food on the table. So we still would have to work within that constraint. And we spend so much time at the workplace. You made a very key point at the outset of your article that there's a lot of things one can control in their life, especially when one looks at it from a hyperdimensional, archontic interference perspective. But one of the things that are at times beyond our control is the workplace. We have to go there. We have to earn an income. We have to make a living. And it seems to me, Carissa, and I'd like your thoughts on this, at times, the workplace could be like an archontic louche fest, the way that things are set up, in a way that it just sucks on our vital energies. It becomes a preoccupation at times because of the personalities involved, and many times entity-infested personalities. So we bring all this angst and anxiety with us at home. It's a Friday night. We're supposed to be starting a weekend, and we're still preoccupied with all the crap we had to endure, you know, at work, and the fact that we're going to have to go back to it on Monday. So please describe any way you want to start how you've perceived that phenomena and what prompted you to write the article.
I'll start with the second part of what you said, what prompted me to write the article, and then I'll get into what I've perceived, which is huge. But what prompted me to write the article is many, many years of being out in the workforce at many, many jobs, and over enough time, you know, enough years working at enough places and enough industries around the country, you eventually just get to a point where you start to really notice things, that things are not what they seem to be. I've talked about it throughout the article. I talk about patterns in the chaos. So, you know, if you're out there long enough at enough places, you start to notice some weird things, especially if you already have weirdness happening in your life, like I do. It doesn't stop just at home and in your personal life. It bleeds over into your jobs and your workplace experience. But just being out there for so many years, I started working officially when I was 16. Just a really brief background so listeners will understand what my experiences are and where I'm coming from. But I started, you know, officially working at 16, and because I was out of the house before I even graduated high school, I kind of had like a bumpy beginning to my life. So I didn't have, you know, people there to take care of me. So I had to take care of myself. So I always had multiple multiple jobs going on at any given point, and that went on for years. And there were the lower rung kind of jobs. I was waitressing, cocktailing, hotel, front desk, reservation shuttles, just very extensive customer service, exhausting types of jobs, multiple jobs at any given point for years. You know, I'd have one, get rid of another, replace that one with another job. I describe it as like kind of weaving threads. So I always had at least two jobs going at any given point. At the most, I had three. Again, in those types of very highly customer service oriented industries, which puts you in the line of fire of just so many people. Not only do you have so many coworkers and bosses going on, especially if you've got more than one job, but it's just endless people interactions with the public. And then later on, I ended up switching to working in offices. And that's a whole little story about how that happened. But I managed to move up in the world to get better, you know, higher paying jobs in offices. And still, though, always had two jobs going on. So, you know, and then I started working through staffing agencies because I decided I really enjoyed temping. So the reason I've had so many experiences in life with work has a lot to do with that temping. I would just have back-to-back assignments through multiple agencies, you know, a week here, 2 days there, 3 months here, another month here. So I'm just seeing so many different companies, different industries, just meeting endless people. And this went on for years. And so because of all that, it just really put me out there to really see what's going on all around the country and across all industries and all walks of life. So that was, that's where I'm coming from. So listeners will understand. And then again, after being in it for so many years, again, you notice patterns in the chaos. You start to see just the way there's just weirdness pervading so many of these jobs that I think if people have had more of a limited job experience in only one type of area, they may never get to see some of those things that I've seen. They don't get to experience it. So it really takes being out there at so many places for so many years, you know, to start to see it.
You go point by point about how circumstances are created in the workplace, which almost guarantee chaos, confusion, and disorganization. You describe how seemingly the wrong people, but from a Matrix Solution Fest standpoint, perhaps the right people, are put into positions, and by hook and crook, destiny, call it what you will, you're compelled to interact with these people almost on a daily basis. Could you describe the background of that and how these work environments are seemingly set up to make it so difficult at times for people?
Right. Well, that's part of the whole repeating patterns in the chaos. And one of the biggest ones that I've noticed was the incompetent and or ineffectual managers and bosses that get put into positions of power and who never seem to be able to get fired, no matter how bad they are. And in, by bad, I'm talking about creating policies that can drive departments or an entire company into the ground, mistreatment of employees, you name it. But they are not good at their job. They have no business being at their job, and yet they are. And they never seem to get fired. If anything, they keep getting rewarded and just keep moving higher and higher in life. And it's just, if you see it at one job, okay, maybe that's just that particular company. It's how they do things. They're not that bright, whatever. But and you just keep seeing that over and over across so many industries, so many different companies across the country. There's something to that. Then you start to get suspicious. That's one of the patterns. That's the one at the top of the list because it affects everything at a company. The manager or the boss is the most important, and they have all the power, and they can make or break a company, and they can make or break your personal experience as an employee. So that's a big one. And the second one that I discuss in my article is the troublemaker, you know, psycho crazy employees. Who never seem to get fired, no matter how much bad behavior that they display and how bad they are at their job. It's almost like they're getting protected. And upper management just, you know, seeming to have this, what I call the gosh, golly gee, I just don't know how to handle this situation, even though they're the manager or supposed to be managing, they're not. And there's like, they're allowing these troublemaker employees to run rampant and bully other employees, be really sucky at their job, which is, you know, affecting all the other employees around them. So, you know, they're just creating all these problems and they never get fired. And again, if you just see that at one job, you're like, okay. Okay, well, that's just how they do things here. But when you're seeing it across the board, it's just over and over and over again at so many companies, you got to wonder what is going on here. So that was a second big pattern in the chaos that, you know, over time I started to see out in my job adventures. And then as far as the companies and the way that they're doing things, so you've got the problematic incompetent bosses, the troublemaker employees that never seem to get fired. Then you have the actual policies and procedures. And this is where, for me, it gets even weirder because, again, we're talking across different industries where you would think different industries, different companies, things should be vastly different, and yet they're not. You see the same type of ineffectual policies and procedures being put into place that usually at the hands of these inept bosses. And these policies are designed to maximize negative energy production from employees. They create endless distraction while sapping employees' energy, you know, so that the employees aren't able to make the most of their personal lives and maybe not even able to fill their destinies or life missions. And overall, these ineffectual policies are driving things into the ground, again, whether it's a department or the entire company as a whole. So I've seen specific, weirdly specific types of policies and procedures in effect at different industries that you would think are completely unrelated. So this shouldn't be happening, but it does. So again, it's suspicious and it's a pattern in the chaos. So some of the things I'd noticed, and some of it seems mild and common, but then it just gets weirder and more specific. But, you know, they have the overloaded job descriptions where, you know, you have employees that are doing sometimes the work of two, three, or four employees. And I describe it like a hamster in a wheel that just keeps going faster and faster, but there's no corresponding pay rate increase. And it's not just in a temporary sort of a situation where it's like, oh, you're going to help fill in during this transitional time period. No, it's just like a permanent, this is the way things are. You're going to be doing three people's jobs. And it doesn't matter that it's not good for you, you know, or that it's not good for the company or the department. They don't care. There's just no, they don't care. Lack of decent training. So like I've experienced this over and over where you're just barely given the tools that you need to be able to do your job. And then they just kind of set you loose out there to go do your job. And of course, you know, that's going to create problems not only for you, but for any customers or other employees you're working with, when people aren't properly trained. But again, they don't seem to care. And then I have this one, it's a very weirdly specific one, but I call it the irregularly scheduled shitstorm days. And this is where the maximum amount of circumstances and craziness are being scheduled to coincide all at once on one or two specific days every week instead of being spread out the way it should ideally be. So it is just like, it's a shitstorm day and you're just, you know, you spend you dread it before you even go in. And when you're there, you're just trying to get through your shift, just try to get through it. And of course it doesn't need to be that way. Like management has the power to change the way things are being done, maybe spread things out, but you know, no, they're not. And the reason to me, this is something worth talking about is because I actually have anecdotes. Maybe I can get into it a little later. Where I've seen where the bosses in charge they knew that it was a shitstorm day for the employee and they seemed to enjoy it. There's like a smile, a smirk, there's a glint in the eyes. They're almost like they're telling you almost with glee what you're going to have to be suffering through and enduring on these days, and they're getting off on it. Like, I'm like, that's weird. And to have experienced that more than once at different industries, that's a suspicious pattern in the chaos. Like, what's going on there? It's like, not only are they doing the same ineffectual type of policy, but you can see that they see it and they know and they enjoy it. So it's like, they're enjoying almost like torturing you. Like you're going to have to go through this. And so that's a suspicious thing. And then of course, another thing I talked about, which is unfortunately pretty common, I call it the bait and switch phenomenon where, you know, the way things are presented to a potential employee during the interview process is not what it ends up being. So once you actually start the job, the truth comes out of what the real situation is going to be. So maybe the boss's personality does a 180 from the whole sweetness and light routine they may have presented during the interviews. And now they become like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. They become somebody else. Once you start working for them, the job duties themselves may get switched around to the point where it's maybe not even the same job that you were interviewing for. They're adding more stuff to it, or stuff they withheld, they didn't tell you about in the interview, kind of trick you. So you start and then the situation isn't what you thought it was going to be. Or even worse, they do shenanigans with salary. So they try to convince you once you start to agree to maybe getting a lower pay rate than what you originally were negotiating. Some little shenanigans with that, but you know, either way, it's like they knew, and it's kind of like they're tricking you. And the reasoning behind it, I've said, is kind of like arrogance or delusion. They sort of believe, oh, the employee is going to be so desperate for the job, so grateful for it, maybe, or financially desperate, that they'll just accept these changes and go with it. And you know, so it just creates mayhem for the employee if their salary is getting changed or their job duties are getting changed. But those were the various, some of the patterns that I had noticed in turn, you know, all around the country, different industries again, that were happening that were very suspicious.
There's almost a gaslighting element also to it. Whether the gaslighters, i.e. the bosses, the upper management, et cetera, are consciously aware of it, Carissa. But, you know, in their seeming obliviousness, they don't seem to know or don't seem to care what's going on in the workplace on a day-to-day, moment-by-moment basis.
Yes.
Because I've been, and it's a good thing I've got the microphone muted while Carissa's talking, because I was like laughing the whole time. Not because it's funny, because I went through a lot of this stuff, folks. Because I had a similar work profile. And there were times when I was temping, back-to-back temp jobs. And, you know, until I latched onto a permanent position, I was temping a lot of the times in certain phases of my life. And the gaslighting, it seems to be that they're oblivious or willfully ignorant about what's going on in the workplace, because in and out of meetings, right, amongst your fellow employees, you talk about, well, this is ridiculous. This shit needs to be changed. These same problems keep happening over and over again. And then when you work it out in a workflow basis, you pinpoint where the problem areas are, right? I mean, it's so basic that you can figure out this is what needs to be changed. This person has to be taken out of that role because he/she keeps screwing things up. And then when you take these issues to the meetings, it's like it goes in one ear, out the other. They talk as if you're not even, as if they haven't even heard you. And then it's just a continuation. If anything, Carissa, at times they add on more policies and more procedures to screw things up even more.
Yeah. And you started out what you're saying, but you're not sure. Maybe they don't know. Maybe they don't care. Do they know? I've kind of seen all of that in some form. I've definitely seen where they do know. They know exactly. That's what tipped me off. You see that a few times, you begin to, you know, a light bulb's going off over your head. This isn't just mere stupidity and, you know, fallible human behavior. This is willful. They know it. When, you know, I talk in the article about, you know, indicators that you can see that somebody, you know, kind of has a negative force operating through them, some telltale indicators. You see, I call it the glint in the eye with the kind of the smirk, and, you know, you just, and they're saying weird pointed things, or, you know, you just see that they know. But then I've also seen it where the bosses really do seem, it's almost like their eyes are just glazed over. They're just far away. They just don't seem to care. It just seems like stupidity, but I do still think in those instances, there's more going on. They just don't, they're like mentally checked out. Like they don't, like you said, like they don't know what's going on in their own department, and they're just la la la, you know, in one ear, out the other. And yet you know, and so the employees almost seem to know more than the bosses, and the employees are more competent. Like you said, you go into these meetings and you can see what needs to be done. You're presenting your ideas, and as in when you're out the other, yeah, that's nice. And they just never do these changes, even though this would really solve problems. It could even maximize revenue. And see, that's almost kind of the giveaway right there, where you see that over and over, they're losing money, jeopardizing their business, and they don't care. Like when valid procedures and policies are being presented to them that could maximize revenue, because isn't that what the whole purpose of any company is? You're trying to make money. So what's going on when they don't value revenue and they seem to value instead, they're putting more of an emphasis on keeping all the employees discombobulated, frustrated, angry, energy drained. That actually becomes, it seems like that's what the priority is here. They're not interested in making money. They're interested in making your life miserable. And, you know, it may sound, you know, angry or bitter, but again, if you just see this happening across enough industries, like people like me and you who've temped and we've been out there and we've seen this over and over, you have to question it. It's just, at some point, it's no longer a coincidence. It isn't just human stupidity. There is something else happening here.
One thing I've also noticed too is because you and I and your partner, Tom Montauk, we're very aware of the hyperdimensional archontic aspect to this, you know, the loosh generating aspect to it as well. When that smirk comes through either a colleague or an employee, that's the archontic matrix, Agent Smith syndrome manifesting itself.
Yes.
That sardonic smirk, sadistic in nature, where you're just being put through your paces and every bit of solution is being extracted at that moment. And there's another aspect that you pointed out in your article also, Carissa. For those of us, and I've had plenty of experience dealing with the public, and that's a whole nother hyperdimension behind yeah. this. Because I've worked myself in a hotel registry where the hotel I worked at along the Colorado River in Laughlin, Nevada was chronically overbooked, deliberately overbooked, yeah. right? And, yeah. and on top yeah. of that, you talked about the shitstorm days. There were days we dreaded, oh, Texas Hold'em convention, great. And then you look at the calendar again, oh, you know, slot machine convention or whatever. Great. Because the line would be literally out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And especially yeah. at times when, like you had that daylight savings syndrome in Arizona, the time never changes. But across the river, across the Colorado River into Nevada, it does change. So you have people rocking up. No, this is our check-in time. This is our check-in time. Yeah, yes, sir. But you know, you're from Arizona. It's a different time there. You still have an hour to wait, right? So you have all these people lined up, chronically overbooked, to the point where we had to scramble to find some of these people rooms. And also, we were told that if necessary, there are certain categories of client and certain categories of rooms where we could bump them, Carissa, where we just scroll down, look for a letter C next to like a book room with guests expecting to have that room. No way. It's like, we just take them right out. We slot someone right in because you have someone in front of you that has all these expectations. Yeah. And I, on one occasion, I had this crazy Pakistani lady, right? Now she was in my line and the rest of her family was in another line, a couple of lines over. And she somehow expected me to telepathically connect with her family members and get her not only into the same floor, but side by side in the same floor in the same hotel. A virtual impossibility, because there's no way I can know what's going on with my colleagues working with her family members. And when I couldn't get her exactly where she wanted me to, she berated me, screamed at me. And this is like the Matrix. And I'm thinking, this is a Matrix moment where this entity-infested woman is screaming at me. And, you know, we're trained to work with these people, like get through them. I spent 40 minutes with this whack job trying to help her. And all I got out of it was just a bunch of grief. Finally, one of my colleagues took pity on me and said, look, you know, I know I'm going to have to start. I don't start for another half hour, but just go and take a break, you know. I'll take over from here. But that's one of the pitfalls. Is there's the energetic, loose draining aspect to it, Carissa, where unless someone is metaphysically aware and put their energetic barriers up, these Agent Smiths will pop up, you know, when you're working with the public and just drain the hell out of you.
Oh, yeah. It's funny. I'm listening to you describe that. It's been a long time since I've worked in hotels, but you're bringing it all back. It's like, oh, God, I've had that. I've everything you just described, I've had it. Because I worked at so many different hotels in Southern California for so many years. And hotels is the one industry that I've always sworn I will never work in again. The last time I did it was 2005 in Charlottesville, Virginia. A very high level hotel. And, but I vowed I will never, ever, ever. They were the worst jobs I've ever had for everything you just outlined. I mean, you're so, it's like you've worked at the same hotels I've worked. But it's funny, it's universal. It's all the same, you know? And the whole thing about, yeah, bumping people, someone is in front of you throwing a fit. So you bump someone else who has a valid reservation. So that when they go to check in later, now you've got to deal with them. But, yeah. So hotels is the absolute worst. And I think it's worse than waitressing even, because at least people are happy when they're getting their food. But with the hotels, it brings out the absolute worst in people because they're tired. They've been traveling. They have expectations and they don't get what they want. You know, they're throwing literal temper tantrums and meltdowns.
The kids are being a distraction, tugging at their legs. Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. 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 So yeah, hotels is the worst. And that's one of the major industries I've ever worked in that is, I think the most, it's just the one that you're going to most likely see the Agent Smith phenomenon happening out of everything I've ever done. That was them. And it's like, if you're working an 8-hour shift, it's throughout your entire shift, 5 days a week. It's exhausting and energy draining and very disheartening. You're getting yelled at all the time, you know, screamed at. I've been cussed at and called names because someone couldn't get the room type that they want. I mean, it's just, it brings out the worst of people. So, which I think hopefully later in the interview, we'll touch on the idea of awareness. Once you realize what's going on and you're aware of the potential, you can start to take control of, you know, your life and make sure you can get jobs that are better for you and in your best interest through like visualization, manifestation, that sort of thing. So hopefully we can touch on that later. But for people going through these kinds of negative jobs, yeah, you got to get out, you know. And you got to find a way to get out. You know, we don't deserve that. You know, don't put yourself in the line of fire. So in certain industries where it's guaranteed and there's no two ways around it, and hotels is one of them. So in certain industries, avoid at all costs. And that's one of them. But yeah, the shitstorm days, that's something I was thinking we could touch on a little bit more. Yeah. But a great anecdote to really illustrate this, it doesn't have to do with hotels. And this is how I knew that there's something to this, but I had a brief, a job that I was only at for 3 days here in South Florida, Pompano Beach. It was at a boating marina. And long story short, I saw, first off, the boss who interviewed me, she did the 180 switcheroo in personality once I started. So she was all nice in the interview, became a whole other person once I started. So that was one part of it. But then the second part was when I was going through my training, it was like Tuesday and Wednesday, and they were already planning to have me be on my own working the weekend by myself with very little training. So I was a little concerned about that. But I saw as this boss lady, which I won't say her name because it is such a specific name. I don't want any risk of identifying her, especially since I've said the industry and where it was located. But let's just say while she was training me, she was explaining, oh, so yeah, this Sunday you'll be working by yourself and you won't be able to get a lunch. There'll be no lunch. So you can bring your food. Maybe you'll be able to eat it at your desk, but you'll probably be so busy you won't even be able to get a lunch during your 8-hour shift. You're going to be running around basically like a chicken with your head cut off. You're going to have a cordless phone in one hand, the walkie-talkie in the other, running around. You're going to have customers walking in off the street who want a tour of the facility and to get quotes on storing their boats. You're going to have people calling in to get their boats taken down so they can take them out. And you're going to have the guys who are on the docks, they're going to be dropping balls. And so when the people show up to get their boats, the boats won't be ready and they're going to be yelling at you and the phone is going to be ringing off the hook. And she was smirking with that glee as she's describing the mayhem that's going to be awaiting me come Sunday when they set me loose on my own with minimal training. And the bottom line is it didn't need to be that way. They could have had somebody else working, have two people on. Like, why would you do business like that? Why would you jeopardize losing money? Like, you're going to have people coming in who expected their boats to be ready and waiting for them, and they're not. You're going to have people who want a tour of the facility and get quotes, and they're not going to be able to get it because I'm getting pulled in 20 other different directions and I'm the only person there. You're going to have the phone ringing. I may not be able to answer it because I'm doing three other things. You're losing revenue and you don't even seem to care. Like, you literally have a smirk on your face as you're describing this. Like, what is that? So that's how I knew there was definitely something to this phenomenon. And it wasn't the first time. I had a whole other job I was at. I described it in an article. I mentioned it briefly about an assisted living facility I worked at for only like 6 weeks here in South Florida. Same deal. Just scheduling every possible thing they could schedule on 1 or 2 days a week and making it just absolute hell for me. When it didn't need to be that way. Things could have been spread out, you know, and they just didn't care. And they almost seemed to take delight in it. Like, they enjoyed seeing the stress it was going to cause. So, I mean, I know some people might think that sounds paranoid, but, you know, I know what I saw, and, you know, and things could have easily been changed. And they just wouldn't do it. And there was no reason why they wouldn't do it. So I have no choice but to conclude there's something negative at work here. It's operating through people. And one of the main reasons is to try to get energy, you know, to farm your energy, siphon that energy off of you, create maximum amount of negative emotions, drain your energy, drain your free time, and just kind of derail you in general.
It brings back these unpleasant memories when it was a temp job again. I was working in one of the major hospitals in downtown Phoenix. And it was a wound care clinic, Carissa. And I was new. Everyone else decided to pull a sickie that day, call in sick. And so with the way this clinic was set up, the intervals between patients was like every 10 minutes. So it was a full patient roster, like every 10 minutes for the whole day. And not only am I the front window person, I've got to fax in the information to the insurance companies to make sure these people still have coverage so we can treat them. So I have to wait, fax the information, wait for the information to come back. I had to answer the phones. And so you can imagine me in the small office dealing with all these people at the front window, coming in back to back to back to back the whole day. And I'm dealing with faxes, I'm dealing with phones. And there's another aspect of the wound care clinic because of the diabetic ulcers. The moment they took off some of these wound dressings, the stench that would fill up the entire clinic would just make me want to retch. And even I'm getting graphic, folks, but this is part of the archontic kind of louche fest aspect to it as well. And I'm not making you know, fun of morbidly obese people, but a lot of these people had diabetes. A lot of these people were elderly, and some of them were morbidly obese. They literally had wheelchairs that were double the normal width. And some of these people, in using the toilets there, that were our dedicated clinics for the toilets, they could barely fit on the toilet seat. So the mess that they would leave when they'd come out of those places, to the point where when we would call up hospital maintenance, they deliberately would ignore us for hours, Carissa. So it's like, A, I barely had time to get away to use the restroom myself because I was the only one there. B, when I did want to use it, I would go into this absolute shitstorm. Right, literally, there'd be feces all over the place, all over the, and because our department, the wound care clinic, already had a black mark with hospital maintenance, they deliberately ignored us, and I understand why, because every day they'd have to go in there and do this, and so that's what it was like for 8 hours, and just getting to this place, Carissa, because downtown Phoenix, they were installing a light rail system at the time, so you know it just didn't pay to drive into town, so. You know, I at least on that job in downtown Phoenix, I was able to take an express down to downtown Phoenix, and then from there take another bus a city bus to the hospital, but taking buses in the middle of summer in Phoenix, Arizona, buses that were late, buses that had no air conditioning, but by the time that you boarded the bus, especially going home at the heat of the day, full of disgruntled people for a bus that was late with no air conditioning, stuffed to the gills, it was just like, you know, a continuation of the Louche Fest, Carissa. After all I'd gone through at the wound care clinic, this is what I had to look forward to just going home.
Yeah. I mean, the assisted living facility that I had touched on earlier, it's much of the same. The shitstorm days we experienced there, it was Tuesdays and Thursdays where the maximum amount of craziness could possibly be scheduled. I'm the only one there. I'm literally running up and down three flights of stairs all day long to the point where I developed a serious foot injury after working there, which is gone now, but it lasted for a long time before, you know, it went away. And I'm running around, and the care workers that were supposed to be looking after the elderly, they're mostly all Haitian and Jamaican. And the Haitians and Jamaicans are at war with each other. They all seem to hate each other, so they won't work together as a team. And then the Haitians were very extremely combative and ornery and insubordinate, so they won't follow directions. So I'm just the receptionist administrative assistant sitting at the front desk. It's not my job to be moving the elderly people around and trying to get them to their doctor's appointments and doing things. But what ended up happening with that job is, as time went on, I had to start overlapping with the caretaker's jobs and the head nurse, because, you know, it's just things that were supposed to be done by the medical staff, they weren't doing it. So I started my job description was times 10 by the end from what it originally was supposed to be. And they deliberately left things out. It was not in the written job description nor in the two interviews I had. So they deliberately lied by omission, didn't let me know some of these things I was going to have to do because they knew they didn't want to scare me off. So they, you know, try to bait and switch. And just Tuesdays and Thursdays in particular, that's where the traveling doctor would come in to visit. And so I had to get all these, you know, up to 20 different elderly people to their podiatrist guy who's there visiting. The visiting live entertainment was scheduled. That was also the haircutting day where all the, you know, people have to go get their haircuts in the on-site salon. I mean, it was just, and then the switchboard. So it was another situation where I'm literally running around with a cordless phone in one hand, a walkie-talkie in the other. I don't get a lunch break. And, you know, I even using the restroom, there was nobody to cover me. So I would have to try to run and use the restroom as quickly as I can get it over with, hoping the phone isn't going to ring while I'm in there on the cordless. And it was total insanity. And it just didn't need to be that way. Nothing you could say to the woman who ran the facility, she wouldn't change anything. Oh, and I didn't even get to the doctor's visits. Like Tuesdays and Thursdays was the day where all the elderly were supposed to go off site to the various local medical centers for their, you know, various medical things that they had, if they had like skin cancer or urinary tract infections, any kind of thing. And it was my job to completely arrange every single thing to do with that, including getting their paperwork filled out, getting them on the shuttle. Then the shuttle driver was very incompetent and couldn't seem to know how to organize the shuttle schedule. So I started having to do his job too, telling him, writing it all down on paper, okay, you're going to go to this place first for these people, and then this place next for these people, you know, organizing it for him because he just couldn't seem to figure it out. And of course, then people would miss their appointments. Their families would find out. I would get screamed at by these angry elderly people's families, like, why didn't my mom make it to her appointment? And why did my dad miss his appointment? And it wasn't even my fault. So in order to not get yelled at, I started to have to do double duty and make sure the shuttle driver knew, you know, try to organize his job. And then the caretakers who wouldn't do their jobs, they wouldn't respond on the walkie-talkies when you called them. So I'm having to do stuff that they're supposed to be doing and still manning the front desk and the switchboard. And it just was so, it was that was one job that I mentioned it in the article. It literally hit every single point that I talk about in the article. Every single wrong thing that could have possibly been done was being done. So it was a total conspiracy. And so I left after 6 weeks. I'm like, I can't even with this place anymore. Like, they don't pay me enough. You know, this is, you know, it's just straight up abuse of the employees, you know, and it didn't need to be that way. But you see how the what they were doing was the same thing as the boat marina, which is two unrelated industries. So to see the same thing playing out at two different unrelated jobs, it's an eye opener. It really makes you realize there's something to this, you know, phenomenon.
And I think it tracks back to not only the archontic hyperdimensional Louche aspect to it. But the fact that the way the matrix works is they seem to slot people, or in the first instance, they would inspire certain people. Oh, I'm going to set up an assisted care facility. I want to help the community, and I've got the money to get it started, right? Or I want to set up, I want to have a wound care facility, right? But the thing about it, Carissa, is after a while in these shitstorm days, you realize, you know what? I could be not just a supervisor. I could run this company, and I could do it better than anyone else. In fact, if I had enough money on my own, I would go up and set up my own, and I would do it right because these people are idiots. And it's all part of the loose generating aspect to it as well. And I'm also reminded of, because I study military history a lot. I know Tom's interested in military history. And I look at how some of the most incompetent generals and admirals get slotted into these key positions. And it's almost like the god of war, Ares, is just like this sadistic maniac who, oh yeah, I'm going to work it out. So we put this guy in charge of this entire theater of operations. He's going to screw things up so bad. Millions of people will die for no benefit whatsoever. The war is going to be stalled out and drag on indefinitely. And that's what happens again and again. When I read, like, for example, Abraham Lincoln, he appoints not once but twice General George McClellan, arguably the worst general in U.S. military history. He was just so afraid of taking any action, making any decisions. He just did nothing for months on end. And when he did get involved and involve his army in a campaign, he would do everything wrong. And George McClellan was a Democrat, the slave party. So if Lincoln's propaganda about ending slavery was valid, why does he put in a Democrat from the Democratic Slave Plantation Party who's incompetent and takes him months to do anything? And when he does anything, he does it wrong anyway. Robert E. Lee kicks his ass, sends him back across the Potomac River where they reform, regroup, takes several months for him to get going again. And the war just drags on, the casualties pile up. And you see this in particular campaigns, not just one, but in numerous campaigns where it just like fate conspires to put the worst possible people, Carissa, in positions of responsibility where they're almost guaranteed to screw things up.
Oh, yeah. And it maximizes, negative energy production. But in the case of war, death, which is like the human sacrifice thing. But that's what I mean by my article title, like what goes on in the workplace. It's a microcosm of the entire world situation. And I was definitely thinking about the war situation. Just that's a big one. But which you just explained really well, because you actually know different histories about it. But it's a microcosm. The whole world is functioning like this. So it's not just jobs. It's everywhere we go. So I wanted people to see, like, if people are aware of the worldwide conspiracy, don't think it ends there. It's happening on a day-to-day basis right under your nose. It's from top to bottom. This entire reality, is set up upside down and backwards from what it should ideally be to maximize energy draining, time wasting, distraction, diversion, and in the worst case scenario, death is a form of sacrifice. It's like feeding these negative things. They need human sacrifice thrown out. It isn't enough to just have negative energy. You got to have the death too. So yeah. And not to try to bring everybody down who's listening and think it's all hopeless and negative, because I do at the end try to explain what can we do about this? In a lot of ways we can't change what's happening on the macro level for worldwide, but you can start with your own individual situation, becoming aware that this is happening most likely to you at some, in some level at some point. And then, through awareness and knowledge, start to try to get the upper hand and turn the table so you don't become a victim of this. And you can turn things around, at least for yourself. You got to start at the individual level and just work your way up from there.
Indeed. And from an intelligence gathering standpoint also, Carissa, not only does one experience, if they're aware of the hyperdimensional aspect, this archontic Agent Smith louche fest that, we are subject to in the workplace, but also the ability to learn. Like, for example, because I took temp jobs and I worked through a variety of temp agencies like yourself, after I left the military intelligence community, I started working in these different places, telecommunications, because I was involved in communications in the military, so working for the military, so that kind of made sense. And then later, I was involved in the hospital industry, right? So you begin, and I worked in different departments in these huge hospitals in Phoenix, Arizona. So I'd be in one department, be in another, and I would see myself, the malign, pervasive influence of the pharmaceutical industry, how it basically just controls everything. And I saw myself, how fallacious and how wrong, how evil the drug testing procedures and drug testing system was, how they literally used these dementia patients, these Alzheimer patients, and you know, the families of these dementia Alzheimer patients, they're at their wits' end. I mean, they're ready to volunteer their loved elderly just to get some level of relief. You know what I mean? And I've read these reports. It says, okay, Acme XYZ drug, supposedly to cure this or alleviate these symptoms, yada, yada, yada. And then they list a whole laundry list of symptoms, right? Adverse effects, this happened, you know, loss of balance, disorientation. I mean, it goes on. And at the bottom, get this, at the bottom, invariably, every time, but we see no possible connection to the drug itself. So it's, again, that gaslighting, Carissa, where they list all these things which they've observed. And then at the very bottom, had nothing to do with the drugs that were being administered in these trials. Okay, that's just a coincidence. And then the two people, one of them was this real evil, wicked woman, right? But her boss was this vacant, empty vessel, entity person, kind of like had this weird, foolish grin all the time, wide-eyed, kind of vacant look, older lady. And I would see them. They would take these elderly people by the arm. You know, they're adult son or adult daughter would bring them to the clinic, and they would take them into the room. And I would just, to me, that was a chamber of horrors, you know, that they would take them in a room by the elbow and then they'd shuffle out a little while later. And it was like, here I am, of all people, knowing about the allopathic Rockefeller medicine setup. And I get to see this, where they're in these trials, they're basically just poisoning these people. These are already Alzheimer, dementia-ridden patients who got that way largely because of the allopathic medical system. And it's like you point out, Carissa, everything is topsy-turvy, up, back is black is white, left is right, up is down. It's just, and then you find yourself in the middle of it, and it's like, okay, I'm just going to surround myself with a bubble because, you know, this is like Whackville that I'm in. And I'm just here because I need to pay the bills, right? So, it just the things you see, too.
I feel fortunate. I mean, I feel like you're basically trying to kind of say that you've seen like these House of Horror situations, but that's the thing is you got to witness it. Like you've had all these job experiences that have really shown you something that a lot of people never get to see. Like you got to see behind a curtain, even a mainstream conspiracy curtain that a lot of people haven't seen. Plus you've seen the hyperdimensional one too, but like you've gotten to see things. Same here. I feel almost fortunate. Like I don't lament that I've had all these jobs or that life put me in a situation where I had no choice but to have 2 and 3 jobs. I look back and I'm grateful. I'm like, I got to see things that most people never get to see. And I'm fortunate. And if we can take what we've learned and experienced and witnessed and go out, like you can go on your show and write stuff on the internet and share with the world and help expose it, then it wasn't all for nothing, you know?
That's true. In the time we got left from the first segment, Carissa, is there anything you want to add, you know, to give our listeners, you know, food for thought about how this, and also, you know, delve a little bit about, you know, the solutions oriented aspect to it as well, because like you just pointed out, it's important to remind oneself, okay, this is a journey. I'm in physical embodiment, but I'm here to at some, even though it's not entirely revealed to me yet what I'm supposed to do, you know, I'll figure that out along the way. But, you know, folks, the bottom line is don't lose hope. Don't despair. When I was sitting on that crowded, super hot bus, full of surly passengers who, you know, waiting for buses that were always late, always unair conditioned. And I felt sorry for the bus drivers. Some of the passengers would just vent on them. It's not their fault. that these are old rickety buses that broke down and didn't have air conditioning. They're just doing a job too. So when one finds himself in these crappy situations, just hold out hope that things may get better and that you're there, as much as a cliche as it sounds like, that you're there for a reason to learn something at that particular moment in time.
Right. Yeah, we're supposed to, exactly. I mean, I can't say it any better than what you just said. And before we go into a break, and I just want to say there's definitely lots more I want to get into in the second half of interesting things, which I talk about in the article, that I have witnessed over the years at all these different jobs. Like part of the repeating patterns in the chaos are when just seemingly different coworkers across space and time do the same phenomenon of the same scripts, like saying the same verbatim things, the same scripted weird stuff that they're saying, and it's coming out of another person. And it's like, it's an impossibility. Like, how is this person saying exactly word for word what this other person said several years ago in a whole other state? It's another clue of, you know, that Archon thing kind of popping through. I also wanted to get into, hopefully, if we have time, metaphysical phenomenon, like the idea of being driven out of a job, the obstacles and omens that one may encounter if they're trying to go for a job they're not meant to be at. Like, it's kind of like the universe or something is trying to tell you you're not supposed to be here. So, you know, to give listeners some food for thought about that's like a real phenomenon that might happen to people. I've had it verified by other people who confirmed, yes, I've experienced that too. So I know it's not just me, but some, you know, just stuff to be on the lookout for. Just various things, like it's just more weirdness that I've experienced. If we have time to get into that in the second half, that would be great.
Absolutely, Carissa. And can you give our listeners your website?
Yes, it's intoworlds.net, and it's the number two, intoworlds.net.
And you've been listening to Carissa Conti. This is James Bartley. And you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.